This episode of Radio Spätkauf is sponsored by Athletic Greens. Their product AG1 is a powdered mixture of 75 vitamins, minerals, botanicals, bacterial cultures, and nutrients from real whole foods. High-quality ingredients with high bioavailability to ensure all that good stuff is absorbed fully by your body. One daily spoonful supports mental fitness, the immune system, muscle recovery, energy balance, and hormone function.
Now, I've been taking AG1 for about a month, and I love it. I take one scoop every morning with a bit of water, shake it up into a green liquid, and drink it. I usually start my days with a bit of sports, and this little kick I get from AG1, little energy, really is perfect for that. Occasionally, I will take out my dog on walks, and then I'll bring my AG1 with me. It makes me feel very LA while picking up my dog's shit.
I'm not a huge fan of early morning breakfast, so not only does the mix of one scoop of powder with water make me feel like a functioning, healthy adult who's putting good things into my body in the morning, but it doesn't really taste like a green drink. At least not like most of the ones I've tried. The clean, pleasantly sweet taste helps launch me into the day with all the good stuff I'll need before my stomach wakes up and is ready for a big meal. AG1 offers a monthly membership completely flexible and risk-free. AG1 will be delivered to your door every month without obligation and without contract period, so you can pause or unsubscribe at any time. And there's a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you can do a completely risk-free 2-month trial and get your money back, no questions asked. The copper, folate, selenium, zinc, and vitamins A, B12, B6, and C in AG1 support the immune system, so autumn and winter are a really good time to start your AG1 routine. Radio Spätkauf listeners get a special deal. Sign up at athleticgreens.com/spätkauf and receive some free bonuses. A year's supply of vitamin D3 plus K2 drops, which supports immune system, bones, teeth, muscles, and general well-being. 5 travel rations packed in little sachets. And an AG1 starter kit, a storage tin for the fridge, a scooper, and a handy shaker bottle. athleticgreens.com/spätkauf.
Berlin News in English.
Hello, everyone. It's Sunday, December 18th, 2022. Happy first day of Hanukkah. This is Radio Spätkauf, Berlin's news podcast, recording at Vagabond Brauerei's Kesselhaus location. I'm Izzy Choksi.
I am Joran Mundick.
I'm Anne-Marie Harrison.
Hello, Anne-Marie Harrison. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
Our producer turned presenter. So can you just tell us like a teeny tiny teeny bit about yourself?
Oh, goodness. Well, the most important being that usually I'm the producer on the show, so behind the scenes, and today you hear my voice. So, crazy.
Yay, welcome.
That's all you need to know about me.
This is the second installment of our Brews and News winter tour. We are recording live from a new brewery or brew pub every month. And today we're in Wedding at a converted light bulb factory. It's a very cool space, part of a larger complex that hosts all kinds of businesses. The sound is fantastic. We've been hosted graciously by Chris and gang. Thank you so much for having us. Coming up, we check in with active GEW union member and friend of the show, Ryan Plocher, who will fill us in on the most recent teacher strikes in Berlin, and Yvonne von Langsdorf, who will tell us how she and her neighbors stopped an investment company from purchasing their building by buying it but not owning it.
But first, some short news. So starting with some of the most shocking news to hit Berlin this week, you might have already heard about the massive aquarium inside the Radisson Blu Hotel exploding on Friday morning, killing nearly all the 1,500 fish inside it. Peter has announced that they're filing criminal charges and will work to prevent the building of a new tank. Until this week, it was the largest freestanding cylindrical aquarium in the world. 1 million litres of water spilled from inside of the hotel's lobby onto the street, causing damage to the hotel. It appears, though, that some of the fish did actually survive in the water bowl next to the elevator.
But how did they get there is the real question.
I think they just like sort of fell out and then by pure chance landed in a vessel that caught some of the water as well.
I imagine, though, that there must have been some sort of force to have gotten there. Like, they didn't just spill. They must have ricocheted.
Because
it's big. If you see the photos, the lobby is big.
But no one caught it on camera, and there was no security footage either. That was so frustrating about it. I was scrolling through Twitter trying to find the exploding moment.
How's there no CCTV of a hotel lobby?
I know, right? That's what I was thinking.
There must have been no CCTV
of the fish tank, probably. Or they could just see someone, one of their staff, just with a little hammer and a nail.
Yeah.
Let's not let that leak.
The person who was in charge of cleaning the outside of it, probably. No, I'm done with this.
So Berlin's mayor, Franziska Giffey, called it a veritable tsunami. And it's not just hyperbole, as the explosion sent earthquake-like shockwaves with a magnitude of 1.2 through the ground that could also be detected at 15 kilometers depth. So far, investigators are pointing to material fatigue of the 16-meter-high aquarium and the possibility that the cold caused a crack in the glass that expanded overnight. Two bystanders suffered minor glass abrasions and were taken to hospital, while the neighboring DDR museum also suffered extensive water damage and will be closed for some weeks.
You'd think that this aquarium could take a bit of, you know, saving on heating. 2 degrees less in the lobby, I guess.
Yeah, well, clearly.
Enough to make a crack.
Clearly they shouldn't have done.
Oh, my God.
I don't know. How do you heat a lobby that size? Have you been in the Radisson Blu?
No.
I mean, I've been to the aquarium. I've been up as well. That's one of the things you do when
elevator
you have kids.
The middle, right?
You know, yeah, you go up the elevator in the aquarium. So I saw it, but only a couple of months ago. Thank God I got in there while I still could.
Yeah, that is no more. Today is International Day of the Migrant, a day set aside to recognize the important contribution of migrants while highlighting the challenges they face. In Berlin, housing for Ukrainians fleeing the Russian war continues to be overcrowded. The State Office for Refugees reports that their regular refugee housing is at 99.3% capacity. As reported on our last show, the Senate has plans, though, to create new accommodation for around 10,000 people, with our former airports carrying most of that load. 1,600 beds will be installed inside Temple of Hangars, and at Tegel, they're now putting together some lightweight halls with 3,200 beds, which will be the largest sort of refugee compound in the city. And they want to finish that before Christmas.
I hope they do. Although, speaking of cold, every time I imagine just how cold it is out there. It's not nice.
Yeah,
you imagine how cold it is in Ukraine.
I did read they're well-insulated buildings.
Well, in these hangars as well.
Yeah.
True.
But if this news is making you feel a bit helpless, here are some ways to do good works this frosty season. To start off, clean out that closet. We've got Berliner Stadtmission is facing record lows in clothing donations this year, according to their spokesperson, Barbara Breuer. But demand has risen by 70%. So if you can donate, the Stadtmission near Berlin's main railway station is open from Monday to Friday from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. And there are closed containers in front of the main entrances on the Etterstrasse and at the side of the station.
I think I could literally bring that up, that number, like by myself. I have so many clothes that I took out of my closet this year at home in this massive bag. So this is great. I know where to go.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. Plus,
on your way to Vibali. Do you know
that's
what I mean?
That's right. Oh, I actually have dropped off at that exact that one. Oh, no, I'm out of myself as a Vibali fan. Yeah. Plus, if you happen to be braving the post office anyway this year, which I understand, a lot of stress around that anyway, but if you're going anyway to send off some Christmas packages, why not bring a package for folks in Ukraine? DHL is offering a free care package mailing service for Ukrainians. So you just have to pick up a package with up to 20 kilograms of canned goods or hygiene products, etc. There's a list on their website of things that you're allowed to put in the package. You download the DHL label and bring it to a post office. DHL will then take care of sending the packages to be distributed in Ukraine where they're needed the most. I think this is really awesome. I mean, whoever has something good to say about DHL.
Yeah, this is the one time they'll get one.
Yeah.
Fine.
Props.
It's just that once they get there, do you know what I mean? They'll just be leaving it with random people, let's be honest. And then sending a note through the post once they get back to Germany that takes 3 weeks to get there. I'd be like, pick up your package from this random person that you don't know. Oh, is that a scribble you can't read?
Truly.
Merry Christmas from DHL. anyone desperate to become a German citizen?
Anyone?
Yeah, okay, there's some yeps. There's some yeps. Great. Well, listen up. The coalition government has announced plans to modernize the city's citizenship laws and increase qualified immigration. The government wants to ease requirements needed to become a German citizen. Those following their German dream now will only have 5 years to wait instead of 8 before being able to get citizenship, and 3 years if you have a certain level of German and you can show a certain level of Integration. Dual citizenship is also very much expected to be allowed again as well.
How do you prove your level of Integration?
So it's things like, are you part of like a charity network? Do you do stuff in the community? I mean, I proved my Integration through my work as a tour guide. I was like, I know your history, people.
That's a good one.
Oh, nice. Yeah. So not just a random like multiple choice test.
Yeah, no, it's kind of like it also depends on the person that you get at the AMT, you know, where you come from as well. If you come from somewhere and sound like someone like me, it's a lot easier than if you come from Afghanistan or if you are brown-skinned. I am, but I have the accent, so I just got through.
As Elon Musk is trying to find enough people to fire from his...
You can boo a bit louder if you want. Did anyone see that? Nice. Right. Did anyone see that video clip of Elon Musk getting booed for 10 minutes straight?
Oh, what? I love it.
When he went on stage. I love that, yes. What a dick.
So just as he is busy trying to find enough people to fire from his social media platform, Twitter, in Germany, Tesla can't seem to find enough people to hire. Among possible issues for the company is low pay. The German union IG Metall has reported that Tesla is offering 20% less than companies than comparable jobs in the industry. And couple that with the hour of commute to Grünheide and back, I guess... Berliners are just not buying the Tesla dream.
So weird. So weird that they don't want to go out to Grünheide when they're being told they're getting a job in Berlin.
Doesn't mean we're going to have a wave of former Twitter employees moving to Brandenburg?
Ooh.
Maybe.
I thought I escaped the Bay Area.
Now that the immigration laws are lax.
Oh, well, the immigration laws are apparently devaluing the German passport, according to the CDU and the CSU.
Oh, my God.
If you followed the commentariat on that.
In other short staffing news, Berlin is back on the brink of a major medical staff shortage. Parents of small children in our audience might have already heard of the RSV wave that is sending many children to emergency rooms. This has led to a lot of medical staff helping out in pediatrics and a shortage in other areas. Adding to the increasing numbers of staff calling in sick, some hospitals like Charité have had to postpone all scheduled procedures starting this week. Getting to hospitals might also be an issue, so if you're making New Year's plans, maybe stick to something that won't end up calling 112, because there's also an acute staff shortage amongst ambulance drivers. Thankfully, there's some hope on that front. After rescue services were delayed in attending to a fatal traffic accident last week, the Berlin Senate passed a bill making ambulances able to react more flexibly to special workload scenarios such as staff shortages that we're having right now, major emergencies, or pandemics.
So do go crazy with the fireworks.
I'd hold off just a bit, a bit.
Okay. I was going to say don't walk out on the street.
Yeah. Just don't leave your house.
Just around midnight. Just
leave town. Mm-hmm. I have to anyway with my dog.
There you go.
Here's some fun fodder for future fights between bicyclists and drivers. Bikes can now be parked in the street parking spaces. Starting in January, bikes, e-bikes, e-scooters, mopeds, and motorcycles can park for free in spots formerly reserved for motor vehicles. Berlin's senator for... What is she senator for? She's senator for all sorts of things, not just mobility, but also climate and consumers,
I think. Climate and consumers.
Bettina Jarasch.
Oh, okay.
She's senator for all sorts of things and could be the next mayor of Berlin. Guys.
If the Greens win.
If you vote for her. So she wants to move the limit. She wants to move to limit parking spaces for cars and help preserve the cobblestones on the sidewalks for that. You know, Berlin Tram. So here's what we know so far. Bikes have to remain illuminated when parked in the dark in a car space on the street.
Now, this means lights have to be switched on when you leave your bicycle.
All the time, yeah.
Yeah.
Just so cars can see them, I guess.
Yes.
Right. And people can steal them, obviously, because that's what happens to bike lights when you leave them on.
Pretty easy to pick up and take away.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm seeing the plot holes in this. I am starting to see the plot holes in this. Okay. So, they have to leave the lights on, and it's one bike per spot, And in the same formation that the cars have to park in as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, okay. I see a further sideways. Plot hole here.
Parallel to the curb.
Yeah.
So theft-proof bike parking, though, requires fixed metal posts, usually in an upside-down U formation, to fix the bikes onto. Mm-hmm. So when I first read this, I thought, Bettina, mission creep. You know, it's like this tiny bit of legislation first. So what she does is she's like, so you can take the parking spots. And then people are like, yeah, but we also need the architecture for bike parking. Mm. And then over time, it's like, let's build a metal thing here. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's kind of what I'm thinking. Mission creep. I don't know. Does anyone agree, or is there too many holes in this?
I think it's so silly. The rules around it, it's just self-defeating, no?
I mean, that's kind of what I thought. But if I take Izzy's view, I can see how there's maybe a long game in this. I'm just imagining, I mean, how often do you walk down the street and, like, bicyclists and drivers are just, you know, living together in peace?
How much is the fine for
peace?
Parking your bike next to a bike that's in a car parking spot, doubling the load?
Well, usually it's bike fines are way higher than car fines, right? So that's, like, a problem. Because parking badly in a car is 15 euros a day, which is nothing. Oh. And doing anything naughty on a bike is like 50 euros.
Fun fodder for future fights, that, by the way. Very nice.
We like alliteration here. Yeah, I'm just imagining a lot of fights, though. Maybe I just live in a part of town where this is happening a lot, though. No one? No one else? No? All right.
A part of town that we should be doing podcasting in.
Ooh, we love vetting. We do. We love it.
It just took me a really long time to get here.
He created Tegel Airport and Berlin's main railway station, and with it contributed to the iconic cityscape like no other architect in the modern era. Berlin's star architect Meinhard von Gerkan died on November 30th, aged 87 years old. He famously sued Deutsche Bahn after they changed his plans during construction of the station to remove the vaulted ceilings that were originally planned by von Gerkan. Perhaps Deutsche Bahn will now finally finish the Hauptbahnhof in his honor, as it was once planned.
One
can hope.
Yeah.
Yeah. Shout out to von Gerkan. We made a whole podcast about one of his projects, so we are somewhat entangled.
And something to celebrate regarding public transport: the 29-euro ticket has been renewed until the end of April next year.
Whoop.
Yes. Finally, some news from the BVG that actually makes sense.
Yeah. And of course, before we move on, we would be remiss to leave out one of the biggest stories to hit Germany in the last decade. Berliners and the rest of Germans could have woken up to a different government in the next few weeks if a plot to take over the country had been achieved by a group following the conspiracies of the Reichsbürger movement. Police arrested at least 25 people who were participating in this coup attempt, one of whom was the rather eccentric Prince Heinrich XIII of Thuringia.
So instead of Olaf, we could have had Prince Heinrich. It sounds like the cast of Frozen 3. But where's Elsa when you need her?
Yeah, and there's a Berlin angle too, because one of the plotters was a judge on Berlin's district court and a former member of the Bundestag for the far-right party AfD. The plot would have replaced a democratically elected government with one ruled by a small number of elites, with Prince Heinrich as the head of state. And I believe this judge as the head of the Justice Department. For more details on this, we highly recommend you listen to our friend's show, Megan's Megacan. They have a really good breakdown of the story.
This past Thursday, the GEW Union, or Gewerkschaft Erziehung und Wissenschaft, organized yet another teacher strike for Berlin. And according to them, 2,500 Berlin teachers took part. Our first guest is a Berlin-based teacher from the U.S. who is active in the GEW. Here to tell us what teachers are striking for is teacher, organizer, and friend of the show, Ryan Plocker. Welcome back, Ryan.
I'm so glad to be back on Radio Spätkauf.
Awesome. So first, maybe if you could set the scene for us a bit, what's the current situation with the ongoing strikes and negotiations by the teachers' union?
So Thursday was our seventh strike for smaller class sizes. The state of the negotiations is that there are no negotiations. The senator for finances refuses to negotiate with us. He claims that he is not allowed to because Berlin is part of an employer's association called Tarifgemeinschaft der Länder, and he claims his employer's association does not allow him to negotiate with us on this issue, even though it would only affect Berlin. We think that he's wrong, which is why we keep calling for strikes.
Why do you need smaller class sizes?
Lots of reasons, really. At present, we would say that the class sizes are already too large. So, for example, in a gymnasium, which is a university track secondary school, the regular class size is 32. And most classes in Berlin are set to actually increase in size because the city has been unable to build schools or train enough teachers, which is why we're demanding that they regulate the class size, not based on whatever whimsy they come up with in the Senatsverwaltung, but rather based on negotiating with the trade union.
But have you heard also with the new immigration bill, apparently they're going to bring in a rule which means that you can have equivalency in qualifications, which will mean that a huge amount more people who come to this country will be able to do things like teach in German schools. Do you think that's going to make a difference?
I certainly hope that it would make a difference. One of the arguments against our strike for smaller classes is that there aren't enough teachers right now. There are already not enough teachers. And if you make class sizes smaller, then you need more teachers, logically. But there are plenty of people who work in Berlin who could be teachers in Berlin schools, but who aren't. For example, people with foreign qualifications. They're required to have C2 level of German skills. For everyone in the audience, C1 is what you need for university. So the absolute highest level that you can be tested at is what is expected of people who have teacher training from Poland or the Ukraine or France or Syria. And there are plenty of these people, but because they can't pass the language test, their qualifications aren't recognized. So there is a very complicated way that if you teach in your native language, then you can teach. But that would mean that you'd have to, for example, be teaching math in Arabic at an Arabic-only school, of which there are zero. So there's a lot of potential, at least among foreign workers, but that would require the German bureaucracy to, I guess, think a little bit and recognize that there are people who could teach but who don't speak absolutely perfect German, which, funnily enough, is not actually required because I went to German university, so I only have C1. I am, in fact, secretly a teacher without proving that I speak C2 German, so...
Disgusting, how dare you.
I know, it's awful, right? I'm corrupting the children constantly.
What happens if you make a mistake with the dative? The children will take it home, they'll speak to their parents with the wrong dative,
and then
all hell will break loose.
They all write it in their hefter, and like every single lesson with me is one step closer to the end of the Abendland, as we know it.
Ryan, when we last spoke to you, I think one of the biggest issues we talked about was this plan to offer tenured status, so Beamtenstatus, to all of the teachers except non-EU teachers. And that was a problem. Has there been any movement on that front since we last spoke?
None whatsoever.
Great.
So
listen back to our July episode to get the latest on that.
Actually, some things have gotten worse, in fact. So not only... Are foreign teachers excluded from Verbeamtung or tenured status, but also people who are over 52 and people who are not able to pass a certain level of physical fitness. What that level of physical fitness is, nobody knows. But we estimate that about a couple thousand people who have been teaching in Berlin for decades will now be excluded from the newer, better status. And they're now being offered like 300 euros extra, maybe, but that's not entirely certain. So basically, the people who've been keeping Berlin schools working for the last 20 years are getting a big fuck you from the state government. And everybody else gets a way better status, but we have to give up our right to strike. Which is one reason why they might be waiting and waiting to see if our strike actually does anything and then offering a lot of people this... much better deal that comes with the price of not being able to quit and not being able to go on strike.
You said at the top that this is your seventh strike. And I saw a headline, I don't know if you've seen this, from the Tagesspiegel that says that maybe the movement's a bit exhausted at this point. How are you feeling? I mean, you don't sound it, but it's been a lot.
Well, we have to mention here that the person who wrote this from the Tagesspiegel hates the trade union, and Susanne Fiedt-Entwistle's One of these wonderful examples for taking any piece of German press with a grain of salt, because they have newspapers that are openly political in one direction or the other. Mm-hmm. So Susanne Wied-Anthus hates the trade union above all things, and she has personally decided that our strike has run out of steam.
Is she attempting divide and rule?
Yeah, probably, yeah.
Because she also reported, what, that the 1,750 strikers were not officially registered as striking as well. Were.
I don't know where she comes up with her facts, but she's also the person who invented the fact that something like hundreds of teachers leave Berlin every year for Brandenburg just to get the Verbeamtung, not because in Brandenburg they have more Kita-Plätze, or in Brandenburg, you know, you might be able to pay the rent, or in Brandenburg it might be a little bit clean or whatever, lots of advantages to Brandenburg. Mm. She personally decided everybody who ever leaves Berlin who is a teacher is doing it only because of Verbeamtung. And this is just something that she completely made up. And fact-checking is, I guess, not a thing in education reporting. Yeah.
That's what we're doing here. We're filling in the gaps.
But in terms of the strike, I mean, any strike in a social sphere is not easy for the people who strike, because if anybody is willing to shout, "Will anyone think of the children?" All we ever do is think of the children. And also, one of the reasons why we're on strike is for the children, because if there are fewer children in the class, then we can take better care of each kid individually, logically. That's just another issue of division, something that children in Berlin are not good at because there are too many of them in the classroom. So we're always thinking we have the children on the one hand, and then this general pressure to not go on strike because they already missed so much classes, and there was also Corona, and so on and so on, and you have all this feeling of responsibility. Any strike in the social sector is not easy, but as the situation is only getting worse and not getting better, I think it'll be easier for us. An example would be that there's already too few spaces in secondary schools in a number of Berlin boroughs at the beginning of this term, where they just had to kick out classes for refugees, put them in some other random spaces to fill them up with regular classes, for which there are also not enough teachers, and so on and so on. Yeah, so being that the situation is already terrible and just getting worse, I think that our strike will just get more and more steam and not less and less, whatever the Tagesspiegel decides to make up.
That's right.
And that's a strong rebuttal. Yeah. One thing I read a lot about as well is the terrible shape the school buildings are in. And I just wonder if you can just paint the picture. Like, how bad is it? Is the ceiling coming down? Is the heating not working? Like, how bad are the buildings?
Do the children have little icicles on the ends of their noses?
Yeah.
In some schools, certainly. So there was this very famous situation of a school in Pankow where the windows were falling in, and they actually were going to close the school entirely because it was in such terrible condition, but the children protested because they would have nowhere else to go to school. And the borough was like, "Well, I'm not certain where you would be sent somewhere." And they protested to keep their school open. My school just last week, the heat was just off for most of the day. And the principal was like, "Oh, well, just go and look for a room that has heat working in it. I'm sure you'll find a room that has the heat on."
Oh,
and then
God, how many aquariums exploded in your school?
Yeah. Clearly not enough aquariums for us to get any press attention about not having any heat. All the stuff that we've had for years has remained the same. So I teach in classrooms where most of the windows can't be opened because they've been nailed closed, because if they weren't nailed closed, then they would just fall open then anytime there's like wind. The bathrooms are all terrible in the sense that they smell terrible and that they are falling to pieces. We have a required subject where students work with like metal and wood and that kind of thing. And our workshops at my school were closed for 4 years because of a water main break that was also something that could be fixed. Just more details from my own school. In theory, we are not allowed to use the aula where we have lunch, but also theater performances, because technically there aren't enough fire exits. And they're just like, "Well, we could either close this and close like the school entirely, or you just live with the fact that you could have a love parade situation anytime this catches on fire." But I became a teacher because I'm addicted to risk, so...
Living on the edge.
Oh, man.
All right.
So what's next for the movement?
Right now it's sort of the difficult decision. Are we going to start striking for longer periods of time, like saying that we're going to strike for a whole week, or do something called an Erzwingungsstreik, which would be us striking for an indefinite amount of time until negotiations start? These things are difficult because it requires, you know, a lot of people to be willing to strike, which means that they would be willing to stop teaching the kids for a certain amount of time. Also, we have the problem that not all of the teachers are allowed to strike because some of them are Beamte. So that doesn't necessarily, so even if we were striking for like a week, it wouldn't necessarily lead to schools being closed. So we have some difficult decisions ahead, and also striking is also very expensive for the trade union. So we have to think these things through. Our hope is that this is an issue for the repeated election in February, that people think of education as being an important issue when they go to the polls.
Who should you vote for if you think education is an important issue?
Yep.
Wow, that is such a difficult question. So, so like the finance senator is from the Greens, and we had hoped that he would be better than the previous finance senator who was from the SPD. He isn't. But for example, the education senator is from the SPD, and she is completely incompetent. So I guess not voting SPD would be a huge improvement, because some of the problems that I mentioned with the windows falling to pieces and people not being trained enough and like dumb decisions with foreigners, if someone competent ran the education ministry, then maybe those issues could be dealt with. So I would say don't vote SPD. I think that's a clear recommendation from my part.
Okay. Awesome. Thank you.
Where should people go to support your movement? Is there anywhere people can support?
Follow along, get updates, etc.
Well, of course, we have our website, gev.de. All of it is in German. I apologize in advance for this. You can support trade unions by becoming a trade union member. You can support the whole trade union movement by joining any trade union that you could join. You wouldn't necessarily have to join mine. The more people are in trade unions, the better it is for the movement as a whole.
Right on. Yeah, we love unions. Thank you so much, Ryan.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
You know, if like striking is so hard for social stuff, couldn't you do like a get a different like group to strike for you? Like get the BVG to go on strike so that schools get better.
Oh, that's an idea.
You know?
Yeah, proxy strike.
Proxy strike.
Yeah. Let's do it.
So or heard it here first. England is heading for, which is
everyone.
General strike.
Yeah. Everyone's on strike.
Right. And some people in socialist movements of years gone by would call that equivalent to a revolution. Because general strikes are so monumental. It's like all these sectors going on strike at the same time, the country grinds to a halt. I mean, like, what else is that other than like a cry for system change?
Right. Nice. And here, I mean, it does seem precipitous because of all these shortages as well. I mean, you have layers on layers. Children are getting sick. There's no ambulances. Teachers aren't, you know, there aren't enough teachers. The working conditions are bad. Revolution, anyone?
Yeah, come on. General strike coming up.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, I don't know. Let's just state the obvious here. This is what happens when you do not invest in your public services, right?
Yeah.
So tax the rich and feed the public services.
Whoop. Okay, we've got another date for your calendar. The Berlin Referendum on Climate Neutrality by 2030, known as Berlin Klimaneutral 2030, that is, will take place on March 26th.
Yeah, that's like 2 days after this guy is due to get out of me. So I will be doing that
for our listeners. Yeah.
What does that mean if pregnant? You don't see it?
There is a little man, tiny little man hiding in my body. No, little baby boy. Gonna have a little baby boy.
So you'll be postal voting this
time. Yeah, I think I'll be postal voting, maybe from the hospital.
Yeah.
Well, this new voting date is bad news for the referendum's organizers and its supporters. They had hoped for a shared date with the rerun of the Berlin elections on February 12th, but the Senate came with the most Berlin excuse possible. According to them, it is impossible to print enough voting cards in time.
Boo.
Bullshit. Yeah. Bullshit. I call it bullshit.
Yeah. Do you know anyone with a press? Like, we could probably organize this.
I mean, how can they? I just don't understand how they can print enough voting cards for the other one in time, but not for the referendum in time. They basically got announced in the same week.
Exactly.
It makes absolutely no sense.
It makes no sense.
For the city, this means more cost for organizing a separate election. It's estimated that it'll cost the city 13.5 million euros to run, and that is in addition to the 39 million euros that have been put aside for the rerun of the Berlin elections.
And you can just see the headlines, you know, in the Berliner Zeitung, in all of the right-wing newspapers.
Klimaneutral costing
13.5 million. We could be spending that on something else, like tax cuts for rich people. Yeah. You know? And it's like, well, we wanted it on the same day, guys. We want it to be preiswert. Mm-hmm. Actually,
we shall comment if these headlines become reality.
Yeah, they're going
to For organizers, it also means it's going to be much harder getting enough people out to vote. And the referendum, as any referendum, requires 25% voter turnout to be valid at all, no matter what the outcome. So that's going to be much harder if there isn't another general election on the same day. The campaign has taken the decision to delay the referendum to court twice, but fail twice to get it on the same day as the city elections. Boo.
Boo indeed. Here's one more thing to keep you awake at night. A new report on the state of Berlin's trees shows that only 4% of them are completely healthy. The report released by the city's environmental agency last month shows that 56% of the trees had minor damage and 40% were significantly damaged. This is the result of years of drought and high temperatures. This autumn was also the sixth warmest in Berlin since record keeping began in 1908, and October 2022 was the warmest October ever recorded. Oof. The amount of rain this year is also enough to make you cry, but you might want to conserve that water. Thank you, thank you. Apart from February, all months in 2022 were just too dry. The Dahlem weather station recorded around 370 liters of rain per square meter until December. Close to 600 liters would have been a healthy amount. 2022 will not only be the fifth year in a row that is too dry, but is also on track to set a new drought record. In an effort to adapt the forest to the climate crisis, Berlin will plant a large number of deciduous trees. These are trees that are better at lowering heat in summer, less prone to forest fires, and suck less water from the ground in winter. I really hope this helps. I have to say, I moved away from California and I thought I left issues like fires and droughts behind me, but no.
No. But it's not all doom and gloom. Berlin wants to construct the largest solar power plant in the city on the roofs of the city's fairground. The project will consist of 15,000 solar modules and is expected to produce an amount equivalent to the annual consumption of 2,000 two-person households. The plant is scheduled to be fully operational by 2025, with some parts coming online in spring of next year already. And Berlin has set very ambitious goals for the expansion of solar energy, but currently many roofs remain without solar systems. But according to the Berlin Solar Dashboard, which is a very snazzy website that tracks Berlin's progress on the solar front, existing systems can cover only 0.9% of the city's annual electricity demand under average weather conditions. According to the master plan Solar City, which I didn't know exists until yesterday, Berlin should run on 25% solar by 2045, unless the referendum comes through, then it should be by 2030, which would mean adding around 700 times as many solar panels to Berlin roofs as there are right now.
We also have a federal goal of 80% renewables by 2030. So I think, 25% solar doesn't sound like that much, but obviously we have, solar does usually local power generation for households, whereas wind power does the kind of the big stuff. So it'll do the industry and it'll be parked outside of the city. So I mean like 25% solar, but at the same time, if you add that to all the wind and then the geothermal potentially and all the heating systems that are going to be based on renewables, then we've got like quite a high number.
That sounds good.
Yeah, so does anyone remember our guest, Michael Effler? Sorry, got that wrong at the time, got it wrong again. Effler from Bürger Begehren Klimaschutz. Do you guys remember him?
I do indeed.
He was a hoot.
He very much enjoyed his opportunity to say fuck on a serious journalistic show as he perceived us to be.
He really did enjoy that.
He had a nice time.
And
yeah.
Now we've said it again. Sorry, Joel. So, well, there have been some updates in the initiative that he came on to talk about, which was to take district heating back into the hands of Berliners. So on the 30th of November, Bürger Begehren Klimaschutz handed over 15,000 signatures as part of their petition that we advertised on this podcast to Bettina Jarasch.
There she is again.
There she is again, and she has a different title here. She is the Green Environment Senator for Berlin, one of
she
her
wears
other
many hats.
Yeah, transport, environment.
Transport, environment. Consumers. Don't forget those guys. So she was in a meeting with them about the sale of the heating, the district heating network that is being sold by Vattenfall. So they've already said that they're going to sell. And now it's just a question of who is going to buy. So Jarasch stated in this meeting that district heating is an important lever for climate protection and a social and livable Berlin. And she also said that if we have the district heating in our hand, then we can switch much faster to a climate-friendly heat supply, which is really backing the idea behind state-backed utilities and state-backed district heating networks, which is really, it's fantastic. It's quite revolutionary. And there's also like a wide majority within the current Senate for buying back district heating. Mm. So they've made an offer now to Vattenfall, and it's just a case of whether Vattenfall actually, bites or not. So it's kind of up to them whether they take that offer or not. The buyback, though, could be pushed back, delayed until after the rerun of the elections. No doubt Vattenfall is hoping for a more free market friendly party constellation. And the SPD are keen to have private utility companies, E.ON and NG, French utility company, in the negotiating room as well. So it's unclear in what capacity they want them to be in the negotiating room, but the fact that they want them to be there is not a great sign. But as a reminder, the district heating system is currently around 90% dependent on gas and coal and would present a once-in-a-generation opportunity to become green if it came into the hands of Berliners. So a very important consideration when heading to those voting booths in February and March.
Mm-hmm. We will certainly remind our listeners before then.
Okay, just a little advertisement. Thank you to everyone who listens. We really appreciate the audience and the community. And if you would like to help keep this project viable, we would appreciate financial support. You can become a monthly supporter or make a one-time donation at radiospätkauf.com. In 2016, a group of tenants discovered that their building was to be sold to an investment company in Luxembourg. They banded together, put wheels in motion, and were finally able to stop the purchase by buying it themselves, but without becoming owners. Here to tell us more about how the occupants of Zossener 48 pulled it off is Yvonne von Langsdorff. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Hi, thank you. I'm Yvonne. First, I have to correct that it wasn't a Luxembourg investment. It was a just ordinary Berliner investor. He's his own plan. So,
right. Okay. Yeah. Thank you for correcting.
Sounds better if it's like evil bankers from Luxembourg or Switzerland. Do you know what I mean?
Well, first we tried to find out who is this person and tried to find out any connections to anything. By the end of the day, it was just him and his companion. So, but they are also be known on the market doing stuff like that.
Yeah. Tell us how and why did this process begin? Like, how did you start organizing as a house?
Well, first it starts with a letter on the postbox and Annie says, stop, there's a letter from the housekeeping service. And I said, oh, it sounds not nice. And then he said, oh, it isn't nice. They sold this house, and the next year, January 2017, we should pay the rent to somebody else. And I thought by myself, oh, that might, that means now that we're going to kick out for sure. And then immediately I was writing letter to everybody in the house and invited everybody, also I didn't know the people, to our living room 2 days later. That was the way it starts.
Yeah, nice. And
why were you so worried about being kicked out? Can you tell people the process?
Well, I was just covering already what they did with the people right the opposite of the road. Yes, there was another company or a family who were buying this house, and they tried to get the renters out by letting the rooftop open by rain. Yes, it was raining all the way down.
Oh my goodness.
And I discovered it. I'm now in Berlin since 1988, and I was realizing every year more how tough, how hard the market went. So, and it's not kind of myth of what was going to happen there. So, yes, I thought now you have to start to do anything.
So you put your heads together, you started organizing, and came up with a plan. What is that plan you came up with?
No plan. Stop.
Okay. You tell the story.
No. They were coming around because everybody has kind of feeling something strange is going to happen. So we would sit in our living room and discuss things over, blah, blah. And all the usual things coming up, like put a transparency out of the house and blah, blah, and fight with the communities. And there was one person, one neighbor said, well, I know a house, they did already the process, tried to do that over the process Vorkaufsrecht in Germany. And
that's the, just to explain, that's the right of first purchase that the district has. Yes. In certain areas.
It was,
we spoke about this on the show.
If you buy a house in Germany, it's kind of a common thing to do that. So if the government or the city wants to buy build a hospital, whatever, they prove the right to purchase first. And this neighbor was saying one house in Berlin tried already to start into this process, because when the house is in kind of a Milieuschutz, the city has the right to buy first. It was a practice in Munich and Hamburg already, where the city governments already used this right to buy first to keep the investors to a certain level of ruling the houses in a kind way. So they say, you make the commitment with us, and if you do the commitment, we let you buy the house. Yes, if the house is in Milieuschutz. So the investor always have to subscribe a commitment. We are not do modernizing the houses. We keep whatever in a certain level.
But this is not what happened in your case in the end, right?
Well, yes, it happened at the end. Exactly, it happens. But the thing is, Munich is a rich city. Hamburg is a rich city. So every investor believed if the city is spoken the way like this, they're going to buy probably because they have money, which the investors didn't believe in Berlin because everybody knows Berlin is broke.
Yes, they called the bluff.
Yeah.
Mm. Yes, so. Okay.
So anyhow, it's a long, long story. To get going, and it's also a process with people, what I did, I was mainly by myself because all the others had to work, as usual. People had to work, has stuff like else, mm-hmm. whatever, and they think they're helpless, which I don't think from myself. So I started...
Yeah, good for you.
So I started to take the first Rockzipfel, I don't know, the first edge of a thing, the other house, and make the first call to a lady to the other house. And then I go problem by problem. The first walk was to the Amtsgericht to see who's already written in the Grundbuch and who's the buyer and all stuff formal-wise, yes? Right. And to let the people follow, I write everything down as a letter and put every single bit in the post box to anybody else. So I did not use mail for purpose, mm-hmm. and I did not use any SMS, because if you can read with your own eyes, you can follow, and you can follow in your own whatever, Geschwindigkeit, mm-hmm. yes?
Speed, yeah.
Yes.
But real quick, how many of your neighbors were you able to get involved, and how many tenants are
19
there?
19 parties, sold about 25 people.
Okay. And they all were willing to come along with you, or?
Yes,
you said some felt helpless.
First, the good thing is they didn't know me before, which I think it was quite useful, so okay. They could read. They could read and could follow the story and could... make their own mind, who is this person, who is this story, and after a while they found out, okay, the things I'm doing have been quite constructive. Mm. So what I did, I find out everything which is useful. So I combined the government with a foundation I found. I persuaded the foundation to give us, what, 3 million euros and to make kind of a commitment. Erbbaurechtsvertrag, yes. I was going and have a phone call with the Mietshäuser Syndikat. Maybe you make an extra Sendung somehow with me. It's quite nice. Verband.
Yeah, we've spoken to them about so that before.
I put all people together, and what usually people don't do, they do not talk to each other because either they think they have to protect what they are going for, or they are too shy, or so on. So, I told everybody what the next person was doing, even the investor.
Yeah. Mm.
And even the investor, it was a nice story, came up when he thought he had the house already as his own, yes? So he was walking through the house, and I met his guy, whatever, and said, what he's doing, oh, he's checking out, whatever. Oh, I'd like to invite him. I'd like to see who's the new owner, which the investor didn't know who I am. So I called three of my neighbors, and then we were sitting in our kitchen. And it was kind of a psychological situation because the investor
came to your kitchen?
Yes, yes. And the investor tried to make me sit me down. And it was the opposite. I made him sit down and was looking at the downside. Yeah. So
I'm so impressed by this.
It was a very special
And controlling what goes in and out of those cups, surely, as well. Like, just controlling what goes in and out of those cups, as in, like, could be slipping something in his drink.
I said always, I'm not against the investor because he has his own plans. So they maybe not my plans. Yes, so, and it's not only bad. I was always going, I'd like to have a roof terrace with you as my neighbor, and that's the plan we should have, that we have more strengths. So I don't want to be a victim.
Can you explain, like, I'm really interested in this actual process of how you managed to do it, right? So you mentioned the Mietshäuser Syndikat, you mentioned this foundation, but can you just explain really simply how you managed to buy the thing and then not be the owner in the end? How does that work?
Okay, the principle is we made at the end of the day a GmbH. Yes,
That's a limited liability company.
Yes, and so the house owns itself, that nobody can own it. That's the principle. So any tenant in the house does not have to pay anything. Yes, so the foundation gave us the money. We made this GmbH, and also we make a Hausverein, foundation of our house.
An association.
Association, yes. This association is one part of the, one leading part, and the other part is the Mietshäuser Syndikat. And the Mietshäuser Syndikat has a minority, so they do not do anything in the daily business. That's ours. So, but at the principle, at the end of the day, if you move into our house and have a flat, you do not have to bring any money with you. Also, if you move out, you don't get any money. And nobody can sell the house, even if the tenants all the opinion, oh, we'd like to sell it, because we have an Erbbaurechtsvertrag, and there would be not, the Mietshäuser Syndikat would not give the permission to sell it on the market. So it's away from the market.
So the foundation is paying for this whole thing. Why would they do that? What do they get out of it?
No, they paid, well, they borrowed us 2 million euros and they took the ground of the house. So on the ground we pay Erbbaurechtszins. Yes, it's a kind of a...
So you pay interest back to the foundation.
Rate. Yes. And, well, it's a Nord-Süd-Brücken Foundation, quite a nice lady, Mrs. Rosenberg. And so they...
In case we all want to get in touch.
Yeah, we might after this.
Frau Rosenberg, everybody. Frau Rosenberg.
Ingrid Rosenberg, Entschuldigung. And, well, they have so much money, and also the foundations like to invest money in good things, not on the...
So to them it's an investment. That makes sense.
Yes, that's it.
Okay.
But that means you have to pay the money back as renters,
yes.
Right?
Not as renters, as a GmbH. So we are taking the rents and paying the costs of interest and paying back, yes. But it's a contract about 86 years, so it's enough time to do that. And also we have a 30-year contract first with a fixed Zinsen tax rates, yes?
Okay, yeah.
It's, you never get that on a bank. Mm. They only give you for 10 years or 15 years, so it's quite insecure. You see that because first the tax rate was higher and they said you should go to a bank to get it lower, and I said by myself, no, I'm not do that.
So you got good loan conditions, yeah, nice.
Yes, now it's lower. First it was higher, but as all these situations came, it's now better.
Right.
Do you pay rent? I'm sorry if you've already answered that question, but I'm just a bit confused.
We're still paying rent. Mm-hmm. And also we are increasing the rent ourselves because the costs are increasing. So now we're doing that. Yeah. And it's always a strange thing because also I'm one of the Geschäftsführer of this GMB. So I'm increasing my rent too.
But people might be inviting you to their kitchen and slipping something in your drink in the future.
I think two of the house would likely to do that, yes.
Are you going to give their names too?
No, I don't.
One thing I don't understand still. So you came together as the renters. You made this GmbH, limited liability company.
Yeah.
You got money from the foundation to pay for buying back the building. And now you need to pay back the foundation through your limited liability company. And the money, is that only the rent you're paying? Or is there, like, did it cost you any money extra than what you pay for rent usually?
No, it does not cost any money extra. But the house is an old building and it's 40 years passed by with doing nothing by the former owners. And all things we doing are we have to acquire money. So you can either take a bank and or you can ask private investors, what we can easily do, and also many people offered us. So we take in German the word is Direktkredite, Nachrangdarlehen. So people can say, I give you maybe 5,000 euros, and they get a certain tax rate, and we can use that for sanieren, modernizing, which we did now. We made a really nice gallery in our house, which everybody can use, and it's nicely done, I would say. And it's an open room, but it's fantastic. Not an alternative room. It's very nice, I would say.
This seems like such a great trick. I think everyone should do this as soon as they hear of it. Do you think it's possible that everyone can replicate what you did?
I would say everybody has the ability probably to do that, but not everybody can do that. It needs some certain personalities. I would describe myself as very forcing and... I'm a passionate person. If I do something, I suck everything in, mm-hmm. And I do not care. I do not care about money personal-wise if I've spent hours for nothing or not, which other people do. And they look exactly if you do something and if you get paid or not, or if I should give something. So to make things going forward, it always needs people like you doing here. Yeah. It is so nice to listen to you because it's so nice to hear the different how people from the outside see the news in Berlin, what happened. So, and it needs people like you. And this is also the kind of people who are needed to take houses. At the end of the day, it's only a handful of people who are raising houses like that. It's not all of them, and it does not need to. And even I don't want to discuss with everybody the color of the wall. Why?
Yeah.
It's like, so you're saying if you have an Yvonne living as one of your neighbors and you come under the threat of being bought, then get in touch first with who? Well, obviously, you're going to get Yvonne to do it. But who does Yvonne have to call first? How do you get this process started?
I went to the Amtsgericht and then I went to the Bauamt. I don't know the word in German.
The buildings?
Rathaus.
Amt.
Der Baustadtrat.
The building office, basically.
Building office, yes. And the city government who are dealing with these processes. And also it was quite funny because I also had to ask all questions. How can I do that? What do I have to do next? And one person on these facilities said, oh, well, you just bring me $3 million, euros, and we can do that.
Dollars,
of course. And you dispose it somewhere. And I even said, yes, I'm going to do that. I have no clue.
How long did this whole thing take?
I left off my job completely. I had to work through 3 months constantly. And I think I was written over 1,000 emails. And I was... And it's a very tough story because it almost went to nothing almost at the end.
Right.
Yes, because I could not speak to everybody. I always had to choose somebody who's doing that for me because I'm just a normal person for people like in the government. And even before the end, they let me down. and said, now the investor's coming and making the commitment, you're not going to get that, yes? Mm. And then I called the lawyer from the government and my lawyer and said, please connect this guy, what happened in the background? And then they told us the investor already sold the house to another company before the first process started the end, which the government didn't think that this could happen. You know, that people are like a little bit naive, I would say so. Yes.
Can I suggest a next project for you, please. Yvonne? And it's basically just a very short and concise handbook with all the names, like Frau Rosenberg.
Yeah, yeah.
Or a how-to guide.
Rosenborg. Oh. But no, just a concise like handbook maybe, like written by you on how to do this. Because I think that... How to buy your house in Berlin. Because I think it's like really, really important. We had that situation about 6 years ago. Our house was... They attempted to sell it for a really high price on the market. And... they didn't get anywhere really, because the buyers would come and they would actually come into our house and then ask us about the state of the property, which was a disaster waiting to happen. So just things like our house doesn't have bells on it, like, so you can just push open the door, which leads to all sorts of situations. And we were telling them about all these situations and then saying, please buy the house, you know, just acting really dumb, like, please buy the house and then you could fix it for us. Okay, so my bathroom had a ceiling that fell down into the shower. The ceiling fell down into the shower at one point. So all of this stuff, and then they kept on not buying it. We also had the signs up as well, like wir bleiben alle and like all of those things. And I think they just took one look at our disgusting house and they were like, no, I'm really not going to buy it. We kind of went through this process of like, shall we buy it ourselves? What is the process? But there was no one in the house. We didn't have an Yvonne. We had lots of people who wanted to be Yvonnes, but weren't. But then we didn't need to be Yvonnes in the end, thank goodness.
It's like, at the end of the day, it's like playing on the action market. You only should buy what yourself like to buy, and you only should put in your effort what yourself like to put in your effort. Yes, you should not count on any other person and anything what you'd like to reach in life. So I cannot understand often that people complain so much about any others. Everybody can start, even in little things, going themselves. And I did not know anything before. And I have no money also. I'm always broke. But a good thing is, if you let participate everybody and always invite them, and that, look, this is a house for everybody. And also, some tenants don't think that way. But you reach more people, more than if you say, just save us. I don't want to be saying, please save me. Why? So, and everybody, and it's just a thinking thing.
Yeah. Word.
I think this is...
Yvonne, I think we'll wrap it up
been,
here.
This has been, really, really inspirational. So if people want to follow you, would you like to just tell them where they can follow you and find out more?
If you want to know the story, it made sense to go on Zossener48.de, yes?
That's Zossener48. So
excuse me. Yeah. And... also, I have written everything in letters and paper. I could offer a book, I think. Maybe it comes.
Yeah, make a book.
And then about our room, a really nice and spacious room. It's Zimmer48.de. There you can have a look what kind of artist is taking place, what kind of installation at the moment.
Oh, that's a gallery.
Yeah, people say like it's a gallery. I think it's an open source room, but it's nice done. So,
space, yeah.
And about myself, I'm doing lots of things, but my passion is making art. And if I need money, I make pants. So I'm doing usually in my life trousers. Pants.
All right.
Very nice.
But the next thing I want to do, because we have a rooftop, yes? We have 270 square meters rooftop. And as you mentioned already, climate in Berlin, I want to do new rooms upstairs, and also I want to do solar, whatever I can do to make the energy coming from the rooftop, and I want to make a roof terrace. And also for that we need money and direct credit givers. So, but I think it's a good thing, because I want to do a Holzlehmbau, and it's fun. You know, also this house gives you, maybe Yvonne, to be Yvonne, if you see possibility for yourself, you go forward. It's nice to be an architect. Also, nobody asked you before to do that. It's fun.
This is great motivation. Thank you so much,
Thank
Yvonne.
You so much Thank for you coming so on much. The show. For those of you spending the holidays in Berlin, or for those of you who are staying here right up until it's time to go back to where you came from and brave the relatives, here are some of our tips for general seasonal enjoyment and maybe more importantly, staying warm. Izzy, what do you got?
So, what I've got is a trip to Dussmann, the bookstore. So, it's the largest bookstore in Berlin and it feels as close as you can get to a one-stop shop when it comes to buying presents for your for every single loved one you can think of. And there is also an excellent living wall at their cafe in the back of the store and fish swimming around in sturdy concrete tanks that don't look like they'll explode.
Fingers crossed.
But you also can't look at them because they're made of concrete.
No, you can look down into them.
Oh, right. Okay.
Look down into them.
Okay.
All right. So everyone is going to the Weihnachtsmärkten and... Some may know I'm a big enthusiast of these Weihnachtsmärkten in Berlin. I have a couple recommendations for the food. I know not everyone goes for the food, but I do. And I'm not going to give everything away. I don't want, you know, everyone going to the same ones that I want to go to because then they'll be full. but first off, I would say if you're a fan of Kaiserschmarrn, which is a delicious snack. Dessert item from the south of Germany. You can get that at
from Austria.
JK, all from right. Austria, yeah. And they have it in Bavaria, no?
It came over the border, but it's Austrian.
Okay. Yeah.
Did Sisi invent it?
Yes, that is a fact.
Oh, brilliant.
I don't think so.
Okay. I'll believe anything. They have good Kaiserschmarrn at Kulturbrauerei, which is also just very lovely, top place to go. They have warming stations where you can sit at the fire and you can also put on these weird old-timey coats that they have hanging up and you can like sit into them, which is a bit strange. I know not everyone's into
my
that.
My instinct is yuck.
Yeah. I know. Mine was too. But, you know, you do what you can to stay warm. It's freaking cold outside. And let's see, Langosch, the fried bread with toppings, if anyone's tried that. A good one is at the Gendarmenmarkt this year, which has moved, but... Still assuming they have langosch. That's quite a common one.
Quackbacon. Yeah, it's called the Gendarmenmarkt, but it's a Christmas market, but it's at Babelplatz.
Yeah.
It moved, eh?
No tree.
Where you're
either.
Being watched over by Lenin.
That's right. You did? Oh, fantastic.
Was it good?
Can verify.
All right.
I had one this stands. Year at a different location. I won't disclose, but it wasn't good. So that's why I'm shouting them out instead. Quackbällchen, another favorite, and cheese balls, which I'm just, as you can see, very into fried food. At the medieval market, at the Raugelände is a favorite.
Medieval market?
Yeah.
Sick. Do they have fire shows and stuff?
They have a lot of entertainment.
Dragons?
No, fire.
Good enough. We'll go.
Once an hour. Okay, fantastic. And they have like axe throwing and they have a very, very small Ferris wheel, which
now
is hand
is
cranked by someone.
Quackbällchen or not, I'm going.
Okay, cool. See you there. And this is the last year that the Charlottenburg Schloss is having their Weihnachtsmarkt in front of the Schloss. So also recommend that. It's very scenic. It's very beautiful. Plus, you can buy a lot of nice gifts for people. But one of my favorite Mitbringse are Marzipankartoffeln. Which, I'm sorry, but it is the most German thing to just, like, make a sweet version of a potato and then give it to someone. I just love this.
They are delicious. Why are they moving do you know why they're moving the market?
I read about a month ago that it had something to do with the fact that they didn't want to re-outfit the whole setup for safety measures to keep it in front. So it has something to do with...
So basically, Siebes. Can't be asked.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly.
All right, well, apart from all your consumerist nonsense, you could also, and this is my hot tip, take a train or a car if you feel, I guess, out to one of the forests or to a lake. It's so beautiful out there right now. I love it. So
I don't know
icy.
If I call
I was
this
standing
a hot
on a lake.
Tip.
yeah, with my dog.
Standing on a lake. Oh my God, be careful, be careful, be careful. Do you know what I mean? But apparently the frost, okay, I learned this on a mum's WhatsApp group. Mums have wisdom, people. Mm. The frost outside is a very special type of frost, and it's called rime, R-I-M-E. Oh. It's like a rime frost. Frost. I think it's actually just, that's an English word, rime frost, right. Frost. And it like hangs down from the branches and stuff like that. So you can see these tiny little like icicles hanging down. It's absolutely
incredible
stunning.
Stuff.
So yeah, go out tomorrow because we'll definitely have this podcast out and ready in the next day when the rime is still hanging from the
beautiful. Go out to Grunewald, look at some rime frost and be merry.
Be merry.
I'm trying to stay warm out there.
I think that's the show, isn't it?
Yeah. Got some plugs?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we got a... Do you have some plugs?
I have no plugs.
No plugs.
No plugs.
I have no plugs. Dan's not on the show, but he wrote into the script that there's something called Monday Night Mics, which sounds interesting, so look it up. And also he's got a show called Oat Milk Daddy, which I think is funny.
I do think that's funny.
I don't know the date or anything about it, but
I feel like Google Daddy, will know these things.
And we'll post links. Look at it.
Then, all we need to say is really like a massive thank you for Anna Marie Harrison stepping in last minute to be a co-host for the very first time.
So welcome.
Well done. And also for pulling together the research for this episode with help from Sebastian Philip, who will also be editing this episode.
Thank you very much, Sebastian.
Thank you.
And thanks to our host, the Vagabund Brauerei in Wedding. You've been gracious hosts. Thank you so much for having us. This was fantastic.
Thank
and thanks to our audience. Give yourselves a round of applause. Thank you. Tschüssi.
Happy holidays. Ciao.
Radio. Spät. Spät. Kau. Kau. Berlin News in English.